What happens when divorce and guardianship collide? Attorney Kathleen George joins Women Winning Divorce to explain how incapacity is determined, what rights remain protected, and how women can navigate divorce when guardianship is involved.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week on Women Winning Divorce, I sat down with Kathleen George to discuss how guardianship and incapacity can intersect in a divorce. We explored who can serve as a guardian, how incapacity is determined, what rights are retained, and how divorce proceeds when one spouse is incapacitated. This conversation offers critical guidance for women navigating divorce while protecting vulnerable individuals. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, I'm joined by Kathleen George, affectionately known as Kat here in the office, associate attorney here at Florida Women's Law Group. Kat has focused exclusively on family law for over 8 years and brings extensive experience in complex matters involving divorce, guardianship, and incapacity. Today, Kat and I will be discussing who is automatically disqualified from serving as a guardian, the rights of persons determined incapacitated, which court has authority when guardianship and divorce overlap, and how a dissolution of marriage is ultimately finalized in those cases. Kat, welcome back to the show. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you for having me back, Heather. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. Before we dive in, though, I would love if you would share with our listeners and myself, like, ways that you personally decompress or reset when life gets overwhelming.
So life gets overwhelming a lot, and it's not really only because of work. It's just, it could be family or friends or whatever's going on. So one of my best things that I do to decompress is, one, I love to watch The Office. The Office is hilarious. I just enjoy it. I watch it and I have a good laugh. Two, and it's something new that I've been getting into, and I just was talking to Heather about this, is Pilates. I think Pilates is great. It's not strenuous on your body, but it's a good way to kind of like recenter back on yourself while still trying to, like, you know, get rid of that anxiety, that anxiousness throughout your body by having a good workout. So I always believe a good laugh and a good workout are best ways for me to balance everything in my life and find a way back to recenter myself when I'm stressed out.
I love that. And for our listeners, another way, a good way to get a good laugh is to hear Kat laugh, because you hear it, it makes you happy. We all want to have that happiness and something to laugh about. So we appreciate you, Kat. Now, for listeners who may be joining us for the first time, I would love it if you would share a little bit about your background and particularly what led you to focus your practice on family law.
Well, I'm originally from Miami, Florida. I'm a first-generation American. And so when I graduated from UNF, my undergraduate, I thought that I wanted to be an immigration attorney. So I worked as a legal assistant, then paralegal as an immigration attorney. And then I went to law school. And once I graduated from law school, I was applying for immigration jobs and I just didn't get it. So I decided, you know, like, let me open up my options. And I applied to different places and I applied to Jacksonville and I got a job as a family law attorney. And I thought family law would be pretty short. I assumed that this was just a way for me to get my foot in the door. And then from there, I'd leave. But then I fell in love with family law. So I always say, like, family law chose me. I didn't choose it, but family law chose me for a particular reason. And I've been with family law ever since. And I absolutely love practicing family law.
Well, and we are so glad you do. Now, let's talk a little bit, because, like, guardianship, and this for our listeners, is generally, it is a whole nother field. You may think, oh, guardianship sounds like family law, but it's not. But sometimes they intersect. which is what we're going to talk about today, right?
Yes. And it's unfortunate that it does intersect, but it's because like life just happens to all of us at certain points in time. So you might be with someone who is fully capable of making their decisions, fully capable of taking care of themselves. And then something in life happened catastrophically. And then you might have one party who is no longer able to do so. But then you do want to be able to move forward in your life, and moving forward in your life might entail divorcing that person. And so when that occurs, or sometimes the person who is incapacitated might, or who's unable to care for themselves, might want, or were in the process of divorcing you already, and that situation and the divorce specifically has to continue on forward. So that's how guardianship does come into play in situations with family law in the divorce matter.
And of course, this is something that, you know, most women, most people, they don't expect to encounter when they're already, you know, thinking about divorce.
Correct.
So what is a guardianship? Let's just start at the very basics.
Guardianship occurs when a person is no longer able to take care of themselves or take care of some of their assets, or something as small as when a child or a minor receives a significant amount of money that's in their name. Because they're a minor, they're not able to be able to make decisions on that particular item, then the guardianship court will kind of step in to help make sure those decisions are made for the best interest for either the minor or an adult in the situation. And if it's in a divorce, who's not able to take care of themselves, if they have a bank account, if they have property, if they have own a business, then the guardianship court will be able to step in to appoint particular individuals to run those aspects of a person's life, either personal aspects or professional aspects. And the guardianship court then dictates what can and cannot be done.
Now, obviously, someone has to be appointed.
Correct.
Via guardian. And there is some automatic disqualifications. Is that correct?
Correct. And so anyone who essentially has an adversarial position to the guardian or the ward in particular, cannot be appointed as a guardian. So the situation that I ran into, which was very unfortunate, a former client of mine with another attorney, I want to make sure I highlight that, filed for divorce from her husband. And at that time, he had full capability of caring for himself. However, thereafter, he was unable to take care of himself. And so even though she had initiated a divorce petition, her attorney at that time also advised her to file a guardianship. The guardianship court, they were not allowed to appoint her as a guardian because she was automatically adversarial to him because of the divorce petition that she filed. So had she dismissed that divorce petition, she would have been able to be appointed as his guardian. But because she was in an adversarial position of his, or she was in a financial adversarial position of his as well, because when you're dividing up all the assets, the court could not appoint her as a guardian. So individuals who are automatically disqualified are individuals who have an adversarial interest to the ward.
Yes. And so, and that is very important to know because, you know, who knows, right? And we'll talk about when there's an incapacitation and what the rules are on a divorce, but you know, that might have changed. Maybe she's like, well, that obviously is not the way I want to proceed at this moment. Maybe we need to take care of him and do it another way. So it's very important that if you're in these situations, you really understand whether or not your family law attorney has this experience and can advise you in that way. Or do you need to go see somebody who's more experienced in guardianship if your current attorney doesn't understand those rules?
Correct. Because I will not say that, you know, I'm a well-versed guardianship attorney, but I do believe that it's important to have some basic knowledge of it. And so just with that basic knowledge, if my client had come to me from inception, I would have said, dismiss this initial divorce petition, then go ahead and file the guardianship petition. But I would have directed her to a proper guardianship attorney. And that's one of the great things about the firm. We have good referral sources. And then that guardianship attorney and myself and the divorce, if it needed to go on thereafter, we could have at least collaborated together and help her do what's best for her. In this instance, I would have told her, you know, not move forward with the divorce at all, dismiss it, but I would have probably directed her to a guardianship attorney to help her out overall in the situation.
Now, you talked about the incapacity, but let's delve into that a little bit, because before Well, someone files a petition for guardianship. Or actually, it's a petition for incapacity, because that's what that's the first step before you even get to whether or not a guardian would be appointed. Now, could you explain how incapacity is legally determined and what that really looks like?
So a guardianship and incapacity are actually two different proceedings. The same way divorce has its own proceedings, guardianship has its own proceedings, because it's helping then address the assets or the person. So if the person wants to, the guardian wants the person to do something individually, or if the guardian wants to repair the ward's home, that'll be under the guardianship. Incapacity determines what level of capability the individual has. So for instance, you're going to go to incapacity hearing. Generally, the ward, the individual, is seen before three independent, like, psychiatrists or therapists, who's then going to be able to see, does this person have any capability of doing anything on their own? For instance, can they enjoy their personal life? Can they go ahead and marry? Can they sign a contract? Can they defend themselves in a lawsuit? The incapacity hearing will determine all of that. And then based on what the report of those medical professionals are, whether or not this person can do sue, but cannot enjoy their personal life, whether or not the person can contract, or whether or not the person can be married. Those panel of experts will then be able to provide to the incapacity judge whether or not this person can do anything at all. And so it's based on the level of incapacity, how far the person can go with a divorce or even in any single aspect of their life. So the incapacity hearing is essential to be able for the guardianship court to know what level of control and authority they allow the guardian to have.
Yes. And for our listeners, when that proceeding happens, and it follows very strict rules and guidelines, because you're right, let's just say husband, because that's what we're talking about, husband's wife, he is appointed an attorney that's independent, that has nothing to do with the wife. If someone's trying to determine whether or not you're incapacitated, there's always an attorney appointed to defend that for that person, because they may not have capacity to handle their finances, but they might be able to decide whether or not they, you know, want to see this particular doctor. There are some decisions, and I have seen cases where they're determined to be incapacitated, but there's different levels. It's not, yes. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Correct.
And that is where the medical professionals who are independent come into play. And it does go before a judge, because it's an important thing, because once it's determined, you know, it lasts for a long time. I've never particularly seen situations where it's overturned, but of course it brings to mind Britney Spears, right? Because that's what we're all thinking about. But that's conservatorship, which is the same as here in Florida, it's called a guardianship. But again, it's kind of like once it's done, at least in California, it takes a whole lot to remove it.
Correct.
And medical professionals, you know, evidence before a judge, but because your legal rights have basically been removed from you. So anyway, it is a very formal proceeding. And then once that incapacity is determined, now we go to the next phase, right, Kat, which is who's going to be in charge.
Correct. And so again, like you're saying, it depends on the level of incapacity. So if someone has been found, when we're looking at it in the divorce aspect, if someone has been found that they're incapable of defending or initiating any lawsuit, that means that incapacitated person, and in this hypothetical, we're using the husband, cannot petition for divorce just because they want to. They need to get the guardianship court's permission to be able to petition for divorce. So that incapacity here, like you're saying about Britney Spears, and there's that mental health component tied to it, it is a serious matter. And restoring those rights back, it is pretty difficult. That takes additional proceedings, additional medical professionals, independent of the court, to say, hey, we can restore this right, but we cannot restore that right. So once you've been found incapacitated has many different steps to it. So, but if you found totally incapacitated, and part of that incapacitation means you can't sue or defend a lawsuit, that means the ward or the person found incapacitated can't initiate a divorce proceeding, or can't even continue with the divorce proceeding if they've been found incapacitated after the divorce was initially filed.
So that leaves the question for our listeners. All right, you want a divorce, and maybe you wanted it before they were incapacitated. And that really doesn't change. So now if the court has found that the ward, your husband, is incapacitated, appoints a guardian, what happens to the divorce?
So it depends on the person who's filing. So if the person who's filing is not incapacitated, like for in my hypothetical, the wife is not incapacitated, but her husband is. If she does want to go ahead and file for divorce, she can. She can file for divorce. The statute gives us two options. One, we can say the marriage is irretrievably broken. Or two, we let the court know that this person has been found incapacitated. However, once that occurs, you cannot have the divorce finalized or the divorce even truly proceed. It's somewhat put on pause from at least 3 years from the date the person, the ward, was found incapacitated. So for instance, if the wife who has full mental capability wants to divorce her husband who's been found incapacitated to the point that he cannot sue or defend lawsuits, and she was he was found incapacitated as of, you know, January 19th, 2026, the divorce will be paused and can't be finalized and truly proceed forward until January 19th, 2029.
Why do you think that is?
I think because the court wants to see, one, if this individual, the ward, may have the opportunity to regain capacity. Yeah. And I think just public policy, you don't want to push forward someone getting an overnight divorce because someone, unfortunately, is no longer able to make any sort of decisions on their own. And I think it's just a public policy thing, just based what I've been researching. And so to ensure that if the person is able to come forward, and when I mean come forward, the ward is able to have some capacity restored, then from there, he can participate in the proceedings. But if he isn't able to have capacity restored, then at least the petitioner, the wife in our instance, can move forward with her life, divide up the assets that they have, and be able to move forward with the divorce. Again, that doesn't mean that the guardianship court won't necessarily be involved because of the assets at hand. But as far as a divorce proceeding, she doesn't need the guardianship court's permission to initiate divorce because she is of sound mind. Now, with all that being said, the guardian for the ward can come back and say, hey, I don't want this to proceed forward, and be able to put a pause to it as well, just in case the petitioner, the wife, says, oh, we're just irretrievably broken, and doesn't mention at all that the ward has been found incapacitated. Mm-hmm. So there are many things at play when you're dealing with the divorce of the person who's been incapacitated. And that's why it's important that family law and guardianship law intertwine in this situation.
Okay, so you want a divorce, you can't get one because your spouse is now incapacitated. Well, what happened? And okay, in this particular instance, because I think this is a good scenario for us to talk about, the divorce is already filed. So we'll just say, hey, that was already going on, but now it has to pause. What happens to the money?
The money technically should not be being depleted at all. The guardianship court will still be in play to deal with this individual's assets. Because now, if she's filed for divorce and there is a guardianship action at play, remember, she's adversarial to him, so she might not she won't be able to be the guardian. Someone else would be the guardian. So those assets, they do become paused, and it comes with the guardianship court. That's why if my client is dealing with someone who's been found incapacitated, I would wait and not file for divorce. So then, because you're technically then the next of kin, you have access to all these accounts anyways, and you'll be able to control everything just as the spouse of the person. And so necessarily, maybe filing for divorce may not be the best situation for you in this matter, but still being able to look over everything and control everything and being the guardian in the guardianship matter would be more beneficial to you. But again, it all depends on what the situation is. So it was you meeting with a family law attorney to really see what's the best route for you in this situation.
Right. If all that, because it gets complicated, because the assets, let's just say in this particular situation, are all marital. And now you've got a third party in charge of your finances. But what about you? You're entitled to it. It gets complicated, doesn't it?
It does get complicated. It gets very, very complicated. And so, for instance, in the situation where I was speaking of, where my client with another attorney filed for divorce and then thereafter filed for a guardianship, She had no involvement at all in the guardianship. She was being notified. She could participate, maybe object, but like the guardian was essentially making all the decisions, which is a situation you don't want to be in at all. And you want to be able to have authority control over all those situations. But again, because she had an adversarial proceeding to the ward, then she wasn't appointed the guardian.
Yeah. And it used to happen. And I don't know. I had several of these cases many years ago. But, you know, for our listeners, where I saw it in probably two or three cases, elderly individuals. So both of them were elderly, but with adult children from a previous marriage. That creates sometimes, you know, some animosity as you're both getting older. And where I saw it in several cases, it was in situations where they were in need of extra care, right? As happens when, you know, you're both the same age. So you're both 70s, 80s. Somebody is requiring more care. And the wife was trying to get them either placed into assisted living or get some extra help. And, you know, the husband was very upset, right? Thought, oh, she's sending me away, calls his kids. They come whisk him away, got a power of attorney, and filed for divorce.
And so here's where the situation comes about.
Yes.
Now you have the ward who's been incapacitated or who has a guardianship, and now someone is filing for divorce on their behalf.
Yeah.
And that's an issue because technically the guardian cannot make those type of decisions without the court's permission. And so that's how incapacity ties in. Mm-hmm. When we were speaking initially, we said if the person who is of sound mind and body, the wife, files a divorce. In this situation where an individual, the husband, has been found incapacitated, not sue or defend lawsuits, and now you have a child, an adult child from another relationship, a brother saying, hey, I want to make sure I take care of my dad or, you know, do this for him. I'm just going to go ahead and file for divorce. The guardian just can't go ahead and file for divorce. There are limitations on the guardian's authority once based on that level of incapacity that came from that incapacitation hearing.
And it's going to be in the guardian court. And for our listeners, that's going to be a totally different judge. It is a very specific, division. And how's that judge going to decide? I mean, because it's not going to be based on you as the wife, right? They're looking after the best interest.
Correct.
So if the judge, whoever the judge is, isn't convinced that a divorce is in that person's best interest, they may not allow them to proceed forward initially, correct?
Correct. So if a guardian goes ahead and files for divorce without the court's permission, immediately your family law attorney should file a motion to dismiss. And then so you have that hearing before the family law judge and you essentially say they haven't complied with the guardianship rules, the statute that says they need the guardianship court's permission. Like their authority is limited. They just can't make all of the decisions without the guardianship court's permission. And so because of that, the family law judge has to dismiss it because technically they don't have jurisdiction over this case because the guardianship court did not give the guardian authority to be able to proceed for the divorce. And the guardianship court has their own best interest factors. The guardianship court has their own rules. And what's most important is, and one of the many cases that's come out, it's actually similar. It was a woman who was being divorced by her incapacitated husband, essentially like the spouse has to be given an opportunity to appear at the hearing. So you can't just, you know, send a petition to the judge. He signs it and there's no hearing. There's a due process right. So the person who was not incapacitated, who didn't file for divorce, they have a right to go to that hearing before the guardianship court and say, hey, this is not in my spouse's best interest. And I don't believe the divorce should be able to go through. And if the guardianship court says no, then there's no divorce proceeding.
Right. And that, I think, just for our listeners, I want to emphasize that it's all about the person who's incapacitated when you are in that court. They're not going to say, you know, because you might be like, but we need to separate our finances better for me. It's going to be really what's in your husband, the ward's best interest as to whether or not they'll allow that to go forward. Is that correct?
Correct. And it's twofold. It depends on who files. So if the ward is the one who's filing, the ward needs the guardianship court's permission to even be able to proceed forward. So if I have a client whose adult daughter is trying to step in and handle everything, adult daughter of the ward, not her child, step in and take everything. Maybe the ward had assets that were not in the wife's name or not jointly held, but they still might be marital. But this adult daughter from a prior relationship is basically trying to force the wife out and now goes ahead and files for divorce. The wife wants to go into the guardianship court and say, like, this adult daughter is, you know, usurping the court's authority, has not gotten the court's permission to be able to file for divorce. And honestly, I don't think it's in the ward, my husband's best interest to be able to move forward with a divorce. And the guardianship court has its own individual factors on how to determine if it's in the ward's best interest or not. And they find that it's not in the best interest, there's no divorce. And the adult daughter of the husband can't just push his divorce forward and kind of kick the wife to the side just because she wants to be able to keep everything that her father had beforehand.
And yeah, I mean, that is a likely scenario for sure and can really be very disruptive.
Correct.
For individuals, because kind of once you go down that road, now you've got the court involved on decisions that get to be made.
Correct.
And, you know, I think it does happen probably more than people realize as far as getting the courts involved and, you know, now that it's a guardian. But let's talk a little bit about that. Guardian does have responsibilities to whoever they're caring for, but as well as the court, they're going to require stuff from them, right?
Correct. Correct. And the guardian does have roles and responsibilities that they're supposed to inform the court, provide an accounting, and frankly, just basically comply with the rules of the court and the rules of Florida law. But unfortunately, you do run into a lot of individuals who don't know the law. They might not have an attorney who's advising them correctly of what needs to be done. And so that's why in this situation, you want a family law attorney, but you do need a good referral to a guardianship attorney who's able to keep the guardian in compliance with what the rules and the laws are. Because in my case, it wasn't an adult child. It was a brother of the husband / ward who was essentially making decisions on his own unilaterally without the guardianship court's permission. In my situation, my client filed for divorce. We went ahead and dismissed that divorce because she had the pending guardianship. Then thereafter, the husband went and filed for divorce, but the husband was the ward found unable to make any decisions or to be able to sue or defend a lawsuit. And so his guardian just went and filed a divorce action without the court's permission. Had I not been able to inform the court of what the guardianship rules are, the family law judge might have pursued and continued on with this divorce, even though my client didn't want that. So that's why it's important to have an advocate, an attorney on your side who knows enough about guardianship to be able to find out what your goals are out of this. And if your goal is not to get a divorce, to properly refer you to a guardianship attorney, but then also to handle and file a motion to dismiss, because this family law judge never had jurisdiction over this guardianship, over this divorce matter, because the guardianship court never gave the family law judge authority to be able to have that.
And just while we're talking about this, because, you know, this may be very small percentage, but for the people who experience it, they need to understand enough, right, that they need help. But what we encountered, you and I, was not all attorneys who understand guardianship will litigate. And for our listeners, that means we'll go to the judge and fight. Because a lot of these guardianships, probate matters are not adversarial, right? There's a lot, the majority, I would say, or at least half, are not contested. And so there are lawyers who aren't going to deal with one that is contested, where people are arguing over and there's a divorce involved. So it was challenging to find the right attorney to assist in the guardianship case because one, that is not, I mean, you've learned a lot about it, but it also could be considered a conflict as well, representing her in that while we had the divorce. And it was really challenging for our particular client.
And to be honest with you, it doesn't happen that often. Like the case law that they have on this is pretty minimal. And the beginning one was like in the early 2000s. And so, and it was the same situation where a woman the incapacitated husband is the one that filed for divorce. And she's like, and the husband first didn't get the guardianship court's permission. And so she's like, I didn't even know that he could do this. So then the family law court kicked them right back to the guardianship court. And the guardianship court just wrote like this very boilerplate order and didn't even notice the wife on it. And the family law court kicked it back. They said, no, she has to be given notice and the order has to be detailed enough to tell the family law court what they have to do. So the case law is pretty minimal. It doesn't happen that often, but the case law and the statute are pretty clear on what needs to be done in order for a person who doesn't have capacity to file for divorce to file one and for the Florida for the family law court to have jurisdiction to even be able to hear the divorce.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes people, they can be incapacitated for a myriad of reasons, which it could be a mental defect or disorder. And, you know, that really might not be in their best interest.
Correct.
And again, that's when it's important to understand if they are under a guardianship. And, you know, let's talk a little bit like, right, because then the family law court, they can't go forward with that. And a guardianship usually happens when there's never been a power of attorney, right? Because if you had a power of attorney, you could do pretty much almost all the same things for somebody.
Correct. But usually sometimes a power of attorney might not be unlimited. Usually sometimes people only have power of attorneys over their property. They might have a power of attorney over their person. And the power of attorney might be limited to this bank account, but not to that bank account or to that IRA or to, you know, these rental properties. So sometimes a power of attorney is limited in what it allows the person authorized to do. So the guardianship might give them more authority, essentially authority over all of their property in opposed to a power of attorney. And the ability of the guardianship court is essentially really mandated somewhat by the level of incapacity. So an incapacitated person can still retain rights under the law. However, that order of determination of incapacity lets you know what they can and cannot do. So their rights are essentially determined by the order determining incapacity. And so if the order says they can't make any decisions at all or handle any of their property, then the guardianship court will give the guardian the authority to do all of that. And that authority might be in excess to what the power of attorney might have originally authorized or empowered the authorized person to do.
Now, and this is a question that I have because I have dealt with them that, so because we've seen those orders, right, where it delineates the rights. Now, often, not often, but sometimes there's a line that says you have the right to marry, but it doesn't say and divorce. Because really, divorce, I think, falls under to pursue a lawsuit.
Correct.
Or defend a lawsuit. So just because they give them the right to marry does not mean, or does it? But I don't think it equals the right to get divorced.
No, I mean, it doesn't. So there's actually like a particular, like the statute says what rights can be maintained and what rights are now taken away. And so you can have the capacity to marry. The court can also say in the same breath, you don't have the capacity to sue and defend lawsuits. So it doesn't use the exact language of divorce. It says sue and defend lawsuits. And then there is one that says, like, if for a dissolution proceeding, you have to go under a particular statute. And so there are even steps to it. So it says sue and defend lawsuits. And when you read the statute further, it says if it's a dissolution action, you have to go to this different statute to tell you that you need the guardianship court's permission. So you're right. Just because you can marry doesn't mean you can file for divorce. And so that order determining incapacity would essentially be your Bible in this situation. And that order determining capacity will tell you what direction that you need to go in. So it says you can't marry and you can't sue defend lawsuits. You definitely can't marry and you can't initiate a divorce action without the guardianship court's permission. But if it says you can marry, but you still can't sue and defend lawsuits, you can marry whoever you want. But then if you want to divorce that person, you need the guardianship court's permission to be able to divorce that person.
Now, this is a question I have. I don't know the answer to, or I kind of do, but not really. Because there's a time period, and then after that time period has run, I think you said 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then will you be allowed to get divorced regardless?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, and that's in the situation where the petitioner, the wife, has gone ahead and filed. She's either noticed the court, and if she hasn't noticed the court, the guardian, the ward, in their answer, if they want to delay the matter, they'll go ahead and still say, you know, like, there's an incapacity. We want to wait the 3 years before the divorce is finalized or to stall the case. It just depends on what position either party wants to play. If you want to initiate it, you might say, hey, is just irretrievably broken and not want the divorce, want the divorce to continue forward. Maybe the ward doesn't have any assets. Maybe right. The ward has nothing. And you're just like, there's nothing for me here. I don't really, there's nothing marital. Everything's already, you know, gone or maybe been divided up prior to the filings, then that you want to continue on in that regard. But if the ward says, hey, I really don't want to go ahead and do this, they need the guardianship court's permission to be able to jump in, file that answer and say, hey, there has been an incapacity. I want 3 years.
Got it. And let's say, you know, they're incapacitated. And then you hear this, you're like, okay, I'll just wait 3 years. Is that proper? Or do you have to ask? And then they say you have to wait 3 years. Or do you even know? Because there's probably no case law really on that. So,
Statute says it. So that there's like an A and a B. The A is irretrievably broken. The B says 3 years. So okay. If you go ahead and initiate the action, if you're someone who really wants to get this done with, just go ahead and initiate the action because you can at least put the court on notice. And then from there, you have the 3 years. You let the court know either A, if you say A, the court won't know about the incapacity and might just continue on with the matter. But then if the ward comes in and says, you know, B, part of their answer, then the court has to wait the 3 years. So it's really just based on your case and how do you want to proceed forward. And so meeting with a family law attorney, if you are in that situation where you do have a vulnerable spouse, someone who's been found incapacitated or someone who's not even been found yet, but you know something is going on. Right. You know, like they're not able to make their own decisions. You know, there is something pending, maybe even a lawsuit from, you know, based on some, what's the word that I'm trying to say? Based on some negligence from a medical professional, you would want to meet with a family law attorney when you're contemplating divorce in that matter to find out what option is best for you. There is every shoe doesn't fit everyone. You might be in a situation where there aren't any assets. You might be in a situation where there are assets, or you're in a situation where there are minor children. What's the best decision for you in moving forward? And whether or not you do want to wait these 3 years, or whether or not you say, I don't want to do this. I'd rather just be dealing with this in the guardianship court if I need to.
Yes. And I think for our listeners, some of the best advice that you can get from a lawyer is we need to get another attorney who does only this. The attorneys who say, oh, I'll do it all, I would just be cautious. It's generally then they can do it all, but just not well. And they really might miss something because this is not what they do all the time. And you could end up in a situation where, wow, we should have dismissed that divorce before going forward on incapacity. We should have consulted in a different way and prepared, you know, you this for the outcomes you're looking for.
Absolutely. Because you don't know what direction is best for you. I always say to my clients, if you don't have all the information, a decision made is not an informed decision. So you want to make sure you have all the necessary information, because then from there, you can make it an informed decision. Information based on lack of information, unfortunately, is to your detriment. So meeting with a professional gives you all the information that you need, because sometimes you don't even know the question to ask. And that's normal. Why would you even know to ask that question? But meeting with an attorney can fill the gaps that you don't even know that you have, and they can help you make a decision that's best befits you and your family.
That's such a great point, because that's what you need, right? You just don't know. And it's important to understand what do you want out of it, and you need to be asked the right questions so
Correct.
That you can be given the right advice. So if there is a woman listening, Kat, who may be caring for a vulnerable spouse or loved one, but she's also thinking about divorce and a bit overwhelmed, not knowing what to do, what advice would you give to women in that situation right now as far as where to start?
The first thing I would start with is meeting with an attorney. Consultation is essential and important for you to know what you don't know. And so based on that information, once you have that consultation, you will meet with an attorney who can help you delve further into your situation and then properly direct you. The family law attorney might say, hey, you know what? Let's continue on with this divorce. Or I might say, you know what? This is not the best use of your funds. Let me properly direct you to a guardianship attorney who can go ahead and help you in this situation. But please, you know, I always say don't rely on Google. I know AI is a thing now, but AI and Google might be giving you information for California when we were talking about Britney Spears earlier, and they call that a conservatorship, but they don't call that the same thing in Florida. So you actually want to meet and consult with the family law attorney and let them know what's going on, and they can properly direct you based on the information that you provide to them and based on just knowing what you feel is best for your own family.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. Now, Kat, I can't believe we've already run out of time just about. But before we go, as you know, our show is called Women Winning Divorce. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know what winning at life means to you.
I think winning at life means support and empowerment. You always say, you know, I'm going to support you, support someone in all their decisions. And when you're supporting someone, you're empowering them. So sometimes you support them in their rights and in their wrongs. And I think as women winning in life, if we're able to support everyone, even in their rights and their wrongs, and just be a support system for them and be able to empower them later on, even in their wrong decisions, I think that's winning at life, because then you're actually, you know, passing on that kindness and passing on that winning aspect, that no matter what's going on, sometimes we have the highs and lows of life, we have the stresses of life, we still have a good support system, and we're still able to be empowered, because our bad decisions won't limit what we can do in the future.
Well, that is a lovely answer. Thank you so much. Lastly, Kat, where can our listeners find you or learn more about your work at Florida Women's Law Group?
Honestly, you can find me on this Women Winning Divorce podcast. This is my second or third time here. And so there have been many different topics that we've discussed that's been great. Or you can go to the Florida Women's Law Group website and then you can get more about me and my background as well.
Well, we've reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Kathleen George, for joining us again and for bringing clarity to such a complex and important topic. Your insight helps women better understand their rights, their options, and how to protect themselves and their loved ones during some of life's most difficult transitions.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather. And I can't wait to be back.
Oh, yay. Then you will. Thank you.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.